Now for Gene Shepherd.
You come first at finest supermarkets.
Yes, you come first at finest supermarkets. Big specials, big savings. Smoked ham, shank portion, 39 cents a pound. Butt portion, 49 cents a pound. George's finest fresh peaches, 2 pounds for 39 cents. Remember, you come first at finest supermarkets. This is WORAM at FM, your RKO general station in New York. Correct Eastern Daylight Saving Time is now 10:15.
What a mess of pottage. Oh yes, we're on the air, and we want to welcome you to the Mess of Pottage Hour, brought to you by Mother Whoopi's Humble Pie. And we'll be here for a few moments discussing the vicissitudes of life. And perhaps before the evening is over, you might discover a few of the golden keys to eternal happiness. Well, we might even go all the way tonight. In fact, there is a rumor out, not too well substantiated, of course, that tonight Mr. Shepherd may actually say in. But we'll wait and see, shall we, gang? All right, let's go. Bubbles. I'm sorry, I still can't get that fantastic line of W.C. Fields out of my mind when he confronted his wife. And she reached for her 38, and he whipped out his derringer, and he says, "Time, my little chickadee, has slowed your draw." "Time, my little chickadee, has slowed your draw. What do you want, my little dove?"
"I'm forever blowing bubbles, for pretty bubbles in the air."
I think I'm going to try to do an entire radio show tonight with a cigar stuck in my mouth. You mind?
"Yeah, that's one really funny thing here today. And you know what the guy said? I'll be George. Well, one got me one all the way." quack.
Oh, yes, and tonight, once again, we here in Studio Land salute you out there in Audience Land. Out there where life is gray and dreary. Out there beyond the reaches of Zsa Zsa Gabor. And all the other people, the wonderful people, the golden people, the beautiful people who inhabit Studio Land. And so tonight, we here in paradise salute you out there in... Bring it up, big breath. That's it, big. When you salute those people out there in Studio Land, knowing the drab, humdrum, workaday lives they live among their file cabinets and their paper dolls, you got to bring the music up big, please.
Cha cha da cha da da cha, cha cha 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 da cha da 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 da.
Oh, it's fantastic. George, you're singing up a storm tonight, Shepherd. Singing up a fantastic song. Speaking of the sadness of life, would you please reset that in there? And a voice, skimp, old man. Wait till I take a little of this hot coffee. Hot coffee and a bad cigar. Yeah, there's nothing in life like it. And while we're talking about the poor sad reaching for the brass ring that we're all doing eternally, constantly reaching for it, we have here a little news note that just has to be repeated. Just, it says so much about our life. It's from Sterling, Kansas. "I don't know where you have been out in Kansas, friends." Excuse me, I immediately fall into my Midwestern accent when I smell those long, hot plains of Kansas. Oh, have you ever ridden on a train over those prairies hour after hour after hour after hour? And you look out and you see nothing but the horizon 400 million miles away. And then you look out the other side of the train. The horizon is 228 trillion miles away. And you just keep going on and on and on and on. Oh, this is country where men walk big, where they stride high and wide, and they know their place. I'll tell you that. They know their place. Have you ever flown in a plane over those great, in an airplane, of course, over those great, fantastic, undulating, it's like a sea. It's like you're flowing over, you're just on and on and on and on it goes. And of course, it produces another kind of man. Do you ever read Conrad Richter's Sea of Grass? This is where it is. I mean, it ain't really Spencer Tracy land. It ain't really Audrey, what was it? Catherine Hepburn, that's right. But, in a way, it might be. I remember the first time I'm in a train going over Kansas. I'm a yard bird. I'm a real new yard bird. I have just left the reception center. Some reception. I've just left the reception center. I've got this brand new scratchy suit on. The collar is grabbing me under the ears. And the new underwear, the new GI underwear has not yet assumed your shape. And it's grabbing you. And your pants are itching your knees, and it was hot, and the train was rolling on and on and on and on. Oh, boy, were we going on and on. I can almost hear them whistles now. Oh, on and on. That's it. Bring it up. Big. Don't chicken out now. That's it. Very good. Oh, what a romantic existence it is out there in the Great Plains. And you know, I'll tell you about them Great Plains if you've never really seen them. Most people have only flown over them today. Or they've whistled past them on a superhighway in a 390 horsepower air-conditioned car. Once in a while, they glance over the edge, that metal rating they've got on the turnpikes. They glance over the edge, and they can see it sort of drifting off down deeper and deeper towards the horizon. It's the Great Plains. Now, those Great Plains are what have made America and Americans very different from any other people. There is no other people in the Western world that have anything remotely like it. The closest thing to it, perhaps, is the African veldt. And that's made them different there, too. It's made the rhinoceros what he is. If the rhinoceros had grown up in Ohio, he would look a little like a chipmunk. But he grew up in the veldt. And so, the great, fantastic plains of America have made Americans very different from any other people. And as I quietly sit here and contemplate my navel, I can almost hear those train whistles. I can almost hear them blowing now. Oh, echoing on and on and on, all the way to the horizon. Bouncing off Ohio and reverberating on back past and through Oklahoma. Oh. Bring it up, baby. That is not a Mustang, friends. Listen to that train just rolling on and on and on. Day after day, night after night. Yeah. Hello, test. Hello. There, I'm back in business here. Now, I'll tell you, it's a funny thing about those trains. That great inverted bowl out there, that fantastic stretch of country that goes on and on and on and on. You can understand why in Europe their trains make little whistles that go, oh! I mean, I've ridden that famous Scotsman, the train that goes from London up to the Highlands. You know the famous one? The one that set all the world's records? This train roars, but it does not roar through plains. It roars through hills, and it roars through little towns, and rumbles past fjords. And its little whistle goes, oh, 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 oh. This is all Toysville until you get out there in that fantastic, unbelievable stretch of country between, I would say, roughly Iowa, that goes all the way to the Rocky Mountains. And it just does not stop. On and on. Well, I'm sitting in this train, see? Me and about 9,000 other brand-new Yardbirds. And we're sweating and we're hot. And, of course, I'm from the Midwest, and it was just country. I was looking at the same thing I'd always looked out at, with slight variations. You know, it is said that in Indiana, it's a fact. If you stand on your toes just outside of the city limits of Hammond, we'd go out once in a while and do it. We'd get off our bikes, and we're outside of the city limits. You know, we're out by the dumps and the river, out by the woods and the swamp. And if you stand on your toes out there, you can see Illinois. And then if you slowly turn around and stand on your toes again, you can see Kentucky, 400 miles away. And then you slowly move to the right and stand on your toes, and you can see Iowa. And then you make a 180-degree turn all the time on your toes, and you look real high up. You can see way off in the distance Iowa, Ohio, Kentucky. And you can see Illinois. Now, the reason you can do this is because there's nothing in between you and Ohio, Iowa, Illinois, Kentucky, maybe even a touch of Michigan. It is that flat. And once in a while, with the wind is blowing right, you can holler, hey, ho, ho, hey, you guys, ho! And then there's a long, pregnant pause, and there is some other kid you can hear hollering back from Iowa. And the only thing that stands between you and the horizon are a couple of bolts of lightning, and maybe a rolling gray cloud. And boy, does it make guys nervous. I mean, guys who are not used to it. We all know the term claustrophobia, which is the fear of enclosed spaces. You know, when somebody locks you in a closet and you get this, oh, wow, wow. Or somebody closes a door in a room and you feel, oh, this is claustrophobia. And people who get this really bad, they wind up hanging out to the floor, expecting in a minute to be attacked by the walls. You know, this is a terrible problem, claustrophobia. Well, the reverse, you never hear talked about. And that's the fear of wide open spaces. You never hear that. And let me tell you, does it work? And we have now just left Fort Sheridan. Fort Sheridan. Yes, the reception center. What a great reception they gave us, too. I'll never forget that wonderful party. We weren't there 24, maybe 28 minutes. And the first corporal went running through the barracks. All right, you guys, GI party, let's go. And I thought, gee, that's the way to greet. You know, I figured there'd be a little ice cream, a few little favors. Maybe one of these little things, you know, that you pull the little paper tabs at the end that goes, pop, happy birthday on it. Maybe the sergeant would come in with a cake and we'd blow out the candles and all sit there and play with pinwheels. Well, a GI party really means that you get down on your knees and for the next 274 hours, you scrub the barracks floor with sand and water. And the first sergeant keeps opening the door and hollering, I want to see nothing but blankety blank and elbows. I'm not going to tell you what he said there. If you don't know, you don't have to know. And if you do know, you're already laying on the floor yelling and hollering, laughing and screaming. And if you don't want to tell them, maybe you better not tell them. Let's keep it between us, what the first sergeant says on the occasion of a GI party. Maybe not even the first sergeant, maybe just a duty corporal. Maybe it's a crummy, rotten PFC that's in charge of your barracks. They all have the same line. I want to see nothing but blankety-blank and elbows, boy. Let's go here, Matt. Move. And it's a GI party. Well, 20 minutes after we have left Fort Sheridan, we have headed out west. And the train is rolling on and on and on. And that night we rolled on through Kentucky. Chung, chung, chung. It's dark, see? And I'm looking out and I can see the Ohio River. We're going over this big suspension bridge. Oh, boy, and I can see the water glistening below. I know I'm in foreign country now. Because even, you know, Kentucky is sort of a myth to us. Living up in northern, it's just Kentucky is way down there. And you know how states are. It's just like, to me, talking to you in Boston or in Staten Island, when I say Indiana, it has a mythical quality, doesn't it? Really has. Well, to us, places like Kentucky, they were mythical. You know, we always thought of Kentucky. We thought of Snuffy Smith. Remember Snuffy Smith? His hillbilly friends? We always thought of, what was his wife's name? I'll give you the brass figligee if you can tell his wife's name. Started with an L. Louise. That's the Kentucky way of saying Louise. And there was Snuffy Smith and Louise rocking on the porch there with his jug over his shoulder and his little friends, the feather merchants. And we are now chugging through feather merchant country. Chug, 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 chug. The guys are half asleep. And when the dawn's early light broke, there we were. We were right there in the middle of it all. With that hot, burning sun laying 400 trillion miles above us, the skyline just on and on and on and on, those great, rolling, undulating waves of plain. We were in the middle of Kansas. K-A-N-S-A-S. K-A-N-S-A-S. Kansas. And there wasn't a human being you could see. Well, immediately. You want to hear the rest of this? All right, we'll be speaking of the lost and dead and the gone and the deserts of the world. This is WOR AM and FM, New York. Oh, all I need is a drink. Oh. Wow. Makes me thirsty to think of it.
The bright, clear taste in beer. Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beer. That's Miller High Life. The happy sound is about famous Miller High Life beer that has soared in popularity because millions more recognize the traditional quality and heritage of an unequaled, unchanging, truly great beer. Wherever people are living better, you'll find Miller High Life in handy take-home cans, on tap, or in the familiar crystal clear bottles. Next time you want the very finest, ask for Miller High Life. The champagne of bottled beer. Sparkling. Flavorful. Distinctive.
Oh, boy. Hey, you know what I'd like to have on the show? A cigar account. I'll tell you a terrible thing. I'm going to have to confess something really rotten, awful. I like a good cigar. If my mother knew that, she'd... You know, somehow cigars are always related with guys, you know, with the big wide rimmed hats, with the big white on white ties, the white on white shirts, you know, guys named Scarface, Greasy Summer, W.C. Fields. Oh, let's see, we've got a spot here. Let's get out of the Woolmouth we have. If you're a man, this is that diet bit. If you're a man who has to diet to look good in lightweight summer suits, then forget it. Then it's time you had your clothes made to measure at Woolmouth, America's leading made. No, also, it reminds me that you must be a pig if that's the case. Why don't you just lose some weight and get a suit that looks like Woolmouth, W-O-H-L-M-U-T-H, America's leading made to measure menswear specialist. And they go on to say that at Woolmouth, you can choose the tailoring camouflage that's best for you. And camouflage works good. Do you remember those camouflage fatigues? Well, they have a suit now that will make you look just like a fire plug, and no one will know you're fat, because fire plugs are supposed to be fat, you know. So, you know, it's got stripes and little nozzles on the side, no one will know. Your Woolmouth suit is made to your exact measure in a wide range of imported and domestic fabrics at prices that will simply astound you. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In honk, cricket, a conk. You can look them up in your yellow pages. They're under tailoring. Not fire plugs, tailoring. And by the way, Woolmouth's custom shirt department is one of the best in town. That's Woolmouth, W-O-H-L-M-U-T-H. In Manhattan, there's one at 803 8th Avenue. Ask for Jerry. And in Brooklyn at 1236 Fulton Street, ask for Nat. He's a tough one. Now, let's see. We have Rover. Speaking of tough things. Hey, Skip, have you seen the Rover yet? Or is this still mythical to you? Well, it is. Really, I'll tell you, he's going to talk out of the other side of his mouth. That is the other side. He talks out of three sides now. Will you talk out of the other side? It'll come out like Dixie. We've got the Rover here, 2000. And for those of you who have not seen this magnificent car, I can only commiserate with you and say that the day that you do, and I'm serious about this, the day that you sit behind the wheel of a Rover, and I mean this, this is not advertising blab, the minute you sit behind the wheel of a Rover and drive one block, forget it. This car has the most... I'm serious, really. He laughs. I'm serious. You know the seats in this car. I'm serious, Skip. The seats in a Rover start where the best automobiles you have ever been in begin. They have the finest, rightly, they have the finest seating of any car I have ever been in my life. And I've ridden in Bentleys. I've ridden in Rolls Royces. They are magnificent. And they are designed medically. They are not designed by some little... guy, some little Italian designer with skinny pants who says, oh, wouldn't this be nice here with a little button here. These are magnificent interiors to these cars. This is a genuine travel machine is what it is. And they are 5 years ahead of anything that's on the market. It's a Rover 2000 TC English car. Send us a note. Just address it to Rover here at WOR and we'll send you pictures and so on. Okay? All right, bring me a little more of that train music, please. Train music, will you, please? Train music. Oh, fine. Well, I'm going to tell you what happened. Just keep that behind me for a bit. You hear that sound? Well, we woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and this is what it was doing. The troop train. We are now in the plains of Kansas, right smack dab in the middle of them. It just rolled on and on. Just clunked like that. And we were not in a sleeping car. We were in a regular sit-up car, you know. We woke up, and half the guys, you know, were kind of seasick. You know, you got a little sick from riding all night. It's hot on the train. Guys have got stubble. They've got their hot, sweaty GI uniforms are sort of pulled open now. Our brand new scratchy suits with still have tags all over them. And we're all a little vaguely homesick already. We're kind of unhappy. And not really unhappy the way guys are today going in the Army, but in a very different way, you know. We were heading towards something. And it just kept rolling on and on and on. And all of a sudden, I got a look across the aisle. It was a guy named Goldberg, who was from Brooklyn, who, by the way, was in my company. Little did I realize that I was going to spend 3 years with him. Across the aisle from me was this guy. He is looking out of the window, and he's white. He is absolutely white. I didn't even know his name at that point. I knew the guy next to me, who was Zinsmeister. And I says, hey, what's the matter with the guy over there? And Zinsmeister looks across from me. Little did I realize that Zinsmeister was later to be Colonel Zinsmeister. We wouldn't have not been that friendly had that happened. I said, hey, Zins, what's the matter with the guy over there? And he looks over there, and here's sitting there all by himself. His buddy has left and has gone back to the John. It's this white-faced Yardbird looking out. He's really scared. He's got a white face. And I says, looks like he's going to get sick. And I say, what's the matter, buddy? He turns and looks at me, his white face, his eyes are sort of staring and blank. He says, look out there. I looked down. I said, what do you mean? What are you seeing? I said, nothing out there. He says, look. He says, what? He says, where are we? I said, Brooklyn. See, where are we? I says, Kansas. He says, where? I said, Kansas. Just, where is it? There's nothing out there. Where are we? I says, it's Kansas. And I was running into the first case of true fear of open spaces I have ever seen him on. The guy was scared out of his skull. He had lived all of his life surrounded by big, tall buildings, you know, alleys. And his idea of open spaces was the polo grounds. He'd get scared when he'd see the, you know, right field. And now all of a sudden, he's looking at Kansas. And that train just rolled on and on and on. On and on. And this guy was on the edge of hysterics. And it developed within 15 minutes, there were at least 25 guys in the company.
that we're really on the edge of breaking down any minute now, just from looking for the first time on that long rolling sea, that great ocean, that unending flat plain of Kansas, rolling on and on, without so much as a single building, without so much as a single Nathan's hot dog stand, not a single Needix to be seen anywhere, not even a subway stop, nothing, just country. We'll just let that soak in for a little bit. Maybe you don't know as much about America as you think you do, friend. Those are not cloudhoppers and hillbillies that are living out there. They are men. They have to be. It is not easy to feel sorry for yourself in Kansas. You can almost feel that Pullman rocking, can't you? And then gradually we pulled off into a siding with nothing but golden wheat as far as the eye can see. We pulled off into a siding, and almost instantly there was silence. And the train just sat there, way down at that far end where they had the double-header engine. They were pouring in some water. And a few guys struggled and opened up the windows, and all you could hear was a great wave of silence that rolled in, punctuated by the occasional cheep of a cricket who was greeting Company K. Just the occasional cheep. And these yardbirds from Brooklyn, these tough guys from Queens, these muscular types from Brooklyn and from Boston and from Philadelphia sat there stunned. They were running into something that they had never touched in their lives before. And it scared the living you-know-what out of them. And me and Zinsmeister, you know, Zinsmeister from Iowa and Shepherd from Indiana couldn't figure out what it was all about, what the scare was about. We had been living among crickets and horizons all of our lives, and among the sounds of trains rolling on and on and on they go, past, around, under, and over, just moving on. You kind of like this, don't you? Oh, yeah. The man that comes from there must be very different from the man who comes from, oh, let us say, Atlantic City. Well, let us say, yeah, Portland, Maine. Very different. He sees a different sky, and he hears a different drum, and he can never get it out of his soul, ever. Ever and ever. What makes you think, really, what makes Bob Dylan different from Eddie Fisher? Bring it up. Oh, wow. How come Shepherd doesn't sound like Jackie Gleason? It is a different drum. Yeah, maybe it's more closely related to the sound of ties. That's those wooden sticks that they've got, you know. If you don't know what a tie is, it's not exactly the thing you buy at Countess Mara, the ones I'm talking about. It's those wooden sticks that they've got that hook up those little metal pins that they call rail. You got it? Hear them clinking? That's known as a long haul sound. That is not the sound of a train pulling out of Grand Central. This is a train that is highballing it on a long haul. Hear it? A doubleheader. 147 cars of grain, fenders, wheat, and cows. 296 head of pig and 16 million miles of muslin. And hanging like barnacles on the bottom and on the side are the hobos. That is an ocean liner of the prairie. What a sound. You want to hear any more of that? Or does that scare you? Do you like that kind of poetry? If I had a match, I'd light this cigar and I'd throw it right in your eye. Give me a match, baby. No, I got one here. Yes, sir. I'll light my lighter that says the Acme Trucking Corporation on the side of it. Long haul's our specialty. Yeah, Kambala. Now, you like that? Well, you got to admit, I ain't Johnny Carson. For me. You know, it's funny, though, when you run into that vast plane. Here's a little story that just illustrates it so completely that I don't think you could even write a novel of 5,000 pages that would say it more truly than this little piece that comes out of the Associated Press. Listen to this now. Will you give me a little romantic music in there? Got any of that romantic piano music in there? Just bring it in there. That's it. Bring it out there. Oh, yes. No matter where you live, you know. Everywhere you go. Whether it's Trenton, whether it's Worcester, Mass., or Rabbit Hash, Kentucky. That fantastic little spark. That little flame inside the human being. That little romantic thing. That kerosene lamp of desire. Sputters and glows. You haven't heard me do a show like this in a long time, have you? All right. Yeah. Listen to this story. It just kind of makes you weep. Get ready with that train. When you're there, hold it there. Just kind of makes you weep when you hear it. Associated Press. Debbie Bryant, Miss America of 1966, was en route to Great Bend, Kansas today. You know what Great Bend is named after? Interested in that? Well, that is a name that goes back to the pioneer days. And the very earliest mountain men who were crossing from St. Louis, which was the jump-off point, trying to make their way to the great mountains of the Rockies, where they would do all their trading with the Indians. And this was long before the gold strikes and all this. These were the mountain men, the guys that filtered on out long before the trains. Well, there was a river that flowed through Kansas. And that river was, in a sense, the dividing line between, well, let's put it this way, the civilized world and that great out beyond. And that river made a big turn there, that great old river. And they called it the Great Bend. And that's a mountain name left by the mountain men. And there's a town there called Great Bend, Kansas. Okay. Can you imagine Debbie Bryant, Miss America 1966, was en route to Great Bend, Kansas today when her official car arrived at Sterling, Kansas. Sterling, Kansas, only stoplight. And it said stop. She stopped. More than 1,500 persons, the entire population of Sterling, Kansas, was crowded around the intersection. When Miss Bryant's car stopped on the red light signal, Mayor M.W. Caldwell, clutching an orchid corsage, dashed up to the car. "Young lady," said the mayor, "young lady, we'd like to welcome you to Sterling. Sterling, Kansas, our fair city. We think you're doing a fine job." Beaming, Miss America replied, "Thank you. It's a beautiful corsage." The light changed, and away went Miss America. "We just wanted to say hello to her," said the mayor. "But we didn't want to go the full price. You see, it was $250 for an appearance, and the town couldn't afford it. We just thought we'd stop at the light and give her a flower." Now, there you are. Would that happen in Brooklyn? What a story. Now, isn't that a great story, really? That's a classic. And that is a true, now I would say this is a true 1966 American folk story. And it says so much about that part of the world out there. It says so much about, now it isn't that they're naive, you know, you're hearing that, you say, oh, come on, you know, what is this, Miss America? No, it's that they're romantics. They are genuine romantics. That's, I think, what happens when you live in the middle of a sea. Oh, sure. Don't you think that Herman Melville was a romantic? Obviously, he was a romantic. He had to be. Don't you think Joseph Conrad was a romantic? He lived on the sea. Literally, he lived on the sea, and he had to create a whole world in his own mind, you know, because it was nothing but water. And so that's what a romantic is, a person who creates this visionary image of existence and the whole scene. Now, how about the romantics of the Great Plains? Well, have you ever read Conrad Richter? That's a romantic, really. Have you ever read A.B. Guthrie? There's another one. You know, these are romantics who are really, in a way, the Plains, the Great Plains counterpart of Conrad and Melville. The man of the city really can't be a romantic in that sense, because the world of imagination is generally all around him and created for him. I mean, you know, the movies, the shows, the temples, the buildings, the traffic, the excitement. Even 100 years ago, it must have been like this in Philadelphia. I mean, traffic, excitement, and so on, compared to Great Bend laying out there in its silence. And, you know, it's still silent out there. Oh, yeah. Just a few months ago, I was out on the plains. You know, the plains stop abruptly, like the shore of an ocean. And they start abruptly. They do not start gradually. And that's the eerie part of it. Most people think of the plains just like it's a vacant lot that's big. It is not. The Great Plain of the Midwest and the West is a specific geological entity, like a mountain, or like a delta, or like an isthmus, or like a continent. It is a specific geological entity, the veldt. And it stops abruptly. And at the point where the Great Plains stopped, or at least one part of it, at Colorado Springs, Colorado, it stops abruptly. And you can stand, I was in this hotel, this magnificent hotel. Gee, I wish I could remember the name of it. Magnificent hotel in Colorado Springs. I believe it started with a B. Boy, I'll tell you, it was one of the most fantastic hotels I've ever been in my life. And it's so the Broadmoor. That's it. What a place! If you ever go out to Colorado Springs, and I have no connection with it, by all means, just drive past the Broadmoor. You wouldn't believe it. All around, it's cupped in the Rocky Mountains, cupped. Literally cupped in the Rocky Mountains. And I had a room that had two exposures. It was on the corner. You could look out of one window, great wide window. There were a tremendous picture window, covered the whole wall. You'd look out of one window, and all you saw was the mountains, the Rocky Mountains, right outside of your window. I don't mean 1,000 miles, right outside, climbing right up to the sky. Fantastic. And those green trees and the white snow up at the top. And I would look out of the other window, just turn around, just turn my head, and you could see forever. Absolutely forever. It was the Great Plain. And it just went on, and you could actually see it dip down. You could see it slowly, gradually start and going down, 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 gradually, until finally it faded off into a purple, green, blue mist, as far as you could see. And at night, it was eerie. At night, you could see a few little antenna. You know how here in the East we think a radio antenna of a radio station is high? Out there, these tiny little matchsticks sticking up, with a little red light glowing at the top, and it was a little tiny antenna from some radio station, 1,298 feet high. Look, are you aware that the highest structure in the world is in the Great Plains, and it's a television antenna? It's over 2,000 feet tall. Can you imagine an antenna tower 2,000 feet tall? That is twice the height of the Empire State Building. Twice, I count, twice. Can you imagine climbing to the top of that baby skip and tuning the dipoles?
Oh, boy.
Oh, I get scared thinking of it. As an old ex-signal corps man who climbed to the top of many an antenna, can you imagine him pointing up 2,000 feet? All right, Corporal, get climbing. Here, take your Volt Ohmist and go. We want the number 2 dipole, the 144 meg dipole tune. Now get going. And be down by 2 o'clock tomorrow morning. Well, that's the way the Great Plains are. And I took a car. I drove out, and I drove down into the plains for about, maybe 2 hours. And I drove to the side of a road in this rented car. And it had a top that could, it was a convertible. And I put the top down. And I listened to the true silence of the plains for the first time in a long time. And that silence is still out there. Yeah, it's funny. It's like the ocean is still empty. No matter how many boats we put on it, it's still empty. It's still empty. That's the end of it. And so these great planes fly over. Oh, yeah. Once in a while, you'd hear a jet go over. And that sound is swallowed up out there in that prairie, like a smallmouth bass swallowing up a minnow. You don't even hear it. Just go, whew, and the silence comes rolling in like a wave again. Oh, yeah, it makes a different kind of man. And sometimes you can understand him, sometimes you can't. He sees a different sky. He hears a different drum. It's not even the same drum that Thoreau heard. A very different drum. It's not Emerson's drum. More like perhaps it may be Hemingway's drum. Who knows whose drum it is, but it's closer to the drum of the Sioux Indians than it is to the phone booth Indians of Manhattan. A very different drum.
This is WOR Radio, your station for news.